Lori has the mic, and she'll run around and hand it over.
So, well, you all okay with this? Do you want to ask some questions? Do you have some questions over what's come up the last few days? Yes, no? Okay, yeah. So we do. Because if you don't, we've got 60 minutes. We've got some great stuff we can do up here. You know, Howard Martin is a really hot drummer. I don't know if you know that or not. We got a guitar player, and I hear Debbie's vocals are just off the charts. And we got some instruments behind us now. So, okay. So we've got really bright lights in our faces. You can see us better than we can see you. So we may not be able to see you. So who's choosing the questioner?
Okay, raise your hand.
This gentleman was
there.
First.
You go. There's first question.
Okay.
And speak slowly and clearly.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for fielding our questions out here. You guys are all doing fantastic work. I want to do this work, too. I'm going to go back home and start. My question to you is, I guess it's going to be a little bit nebulous, but when you were starting, what were some of the things, some of the challenges that you had to overcome? Pick your favorite ones, because I know there's probably a lot of them, that you were confronted with, some of the things that I might be seeing, you know, once I start out, and just things like that. Just some guidelines for a newbie, a guy that's going to be out there and trying to raise the consciousness of people, especially those who are very much still in 3D, 4D mentality. It's not going to be an easy thing, I don't think. It might be a lot of fun. But anyway, just some of the challenges that you have been confronted with when you were starting out.
Thank you.
Well, the biggest challenge I faced when I started out was being too good looking for my height.
Did you tell him about the club?
No, I haven't told him about the club.
You're looking at the two members, the only two members of the club. And what's the club?
The Good Looking Short Guys Club.
We have an election every couple of years. One's the vice president, one's the president. Howard made a T-shirt. We used to trade it back and forth. We haven't had the election for a while. I can see where that'd be a challenge for you, though.
It is a challenge. I've overcome it, but it was just tough. First of all, you said you want to do the work. Can you describe what it is you're going to try to do?
It will be to raise the consciousness, probably starting with people who are very technical, so all kinds of science, all kinds of engineering, and just to raise the consciousness on how to make the transition to go from a three-dimensional, four-dimensional consciousness into the higher non-linear way of thinking.
So you're going to do it through like giving workshops?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so you want to sell training programs?
Yeah, so it's going to be very simple, the format. Right now I'm just making this up, even just answering your question. It'll be just like slides or something like that, and just calling people together and just starting like that. Probably starting with the heart math folks, and then just working my way like that.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, when you begin a new career in any business, the main thing to do is, first of all, make sure that you just really feel authentic within yourself about it. You know, that's the best sales tool you're ever going to have, is you and what you represent. Everybody's got material. Everybody's got lots of different ways in which they can present and do different things. But to me, the ones that, in the industry that eventually become successful are the ones that just have something about themselves from their core that makes a lot of sense, that people can resonate with. And so really always do that. I mean, I think as a speaker, one of the things that I learned early on was that the most important thing I could do as a speaker was just to try to be authentic, be real about things, and that would be the first step in the process. But the challenges you're going to face are not necessarily the same ones that I faced or Greg or Debbie faced in these times. You're faced with the challenge of information overload. These people can get information from a lot of different places. What you really have to offer people today is an experience, because they can get information everywhere. I mean, people can watch me or Greg or Debbie on videos all over the place. Just Google me. You know, You can see live presentations, and you can see me do 2 hours of talk, you know, on a video. So it has to be something more that I can deliver to people when I show up somewhere, and it's an experience that I try to create. It's an energetic experience that I'm trying to offer people. So you're faced with that. You're going to be faced with a lot of information people have. People are overloaded. Workshops in general, you know, if you're going into organizations, for example, you're going to have to be real niche in where you focus, because in general, training programs in companies, a trend is this way rather than this way. So, for example, where organizations spend most of their money on training these days is only in their leadership, in classroom training. And what are they looking for? Somebody special that can deliver an experience. Because the information that they can get that would help these people in the executive levels, they can get anywhere. So you're really selling an experience, and that starts with your authentic self. And then you have to sort of just let the draw of life, so to speak, go where it wants to go. Because the best laid plans of any of this don't necessarily work. If they did, then everybody would be a best-selling author. You know? Here's the formula, this is what you do, and then your book's going to be a bestseller. So there's no formula for it. It just has to be you putting yourself into it, heart to heart with people, aligning with your heart, and then seeing what life brings back. Hope that helped a little.
Next question.
Debbie, do you want to answer that?
Oh. Well, I could just add real briefly something different than what Howard said, which, you know, is important. When you're talking to engineers and techie types, they're usually living a lot from the head up. And so, again, I mean, the HeartMath tool set, if you get exposed to that or learn that, is really helping honor the mind, create a joint venture between the mind and the heart. You can't disavow the mind. So they're looking for tools because they're incredibly stressed. So you have to start where people are at, what their feeling world experience is, draw out from them what it is they want to learn. And for me, that made things a lot easier. Rather than me trying to tell them something, gets especially in the informational overload, especially consciousness stuff, where there's a lot of skepticism. In the Silicon Valley now, they're talking about hacking consciousness. That's the new hacking. And so there's all these meetups that people are going to, but there's still a lot of skepticism from people who aren't part of that sort of thinking. So again, listening, finding out what it is they want help with, what's the bridge, and then if you can acquire a tool set that can help them do that and really bring together that inner balance between their mind and heart so they can begin to connect with their own wisdom, then you're providing a great gift.
Who's the man that asked the question? Where are you? What's your name, my brother? Joe? Joe or Jim?
Joe?
Yes to everything I just heard, and I'm going to take about a half a step. By the way, this beautiful young woman who is circulating the mic, we're very blessed to have her in the room with us. This is my office manager of 20 years we've worked together. Her name is Lori. I'll just reveal a great secret. Lori said next to her former marriage, I'm the longest male relationship she's ever had. I said, what is the secret? She said, the secret is we never see one another. So there you go. Lori, thank you for being with us and helping me all this week. I appreciate it. Thank you. So I'm going to invite you. Were you with me this morning when we did our talk this morning?
Yes.
I'm going to invite you to go back to that talk and maybe rephrase this question a little bit. Rather than assuming you're going to have a challenge, come from the place that the people you are connecting with want to be with you, and they're with you because they want to hear what you have to say. That is, before you ever walk into a classroom or presentation room or a stage, that is vital for you to assume and feel the feeling as if that audience wants you to be there and they already want what you have to say. When I was in the corporations, attempted some of the formal training techniques, like Toastmasters, for example, something like that. And all the rules they gave me, I want to tell you, for me personally, I did it all what they call ass backwards. So technically, I did it all wrong. And Howard's right. What we found true for us back in the 80s, maybe in the 90s, may not be true for you today. So what I found, you know, Toastmasters, they tell you all kinds of things, like when you express with your arms, keep them within a box that's defined by, you know, your shoulders and this. And I said, man, are you kidding me? You know? And imagine everybody in the room's in their underwear, so you feel superior. Well, that is a head game. So I'm going to tell you, number one thing that I learned long, long ago, over 30 years ago, is the only reason that I would be on the stage doing what I'm doing is because I love my audience. I love every person in the audience. I may not know them, but I love them for who they are, for what they have done in their lives to become better people, for making the effort to change and rearrange their entire schedule to spend a few minutes with me in this room. You love them for that reason. And when you do begin to speak, my advice would be to speak only about what you know personally is true for you. And we've all seen people that try to take our work, they see a YouTube video and they go out and they try to teach our work, and the first time they get a question from someone that asks them a question out of the box because they don't know that work, two things have to happen. Either they are honest and they say, I don't know the answer to the question. Very few people are willing to do that. So the ego will take over and they will try to say something that simply is not true, and it becomes very confusing. So I would invite you to speak from personal experience, personal stories, and why it's important to you. When I was in the corporations, here's where I began speaking in the corporations. And what I found was that engineers want to be part of this conversation. However, they feel excluded because they don't identify with the language of auras or pranas or chakras, fourth dimension or whatever. Yep. And when I began to bridge, the first time I talked about a cell as an electrical circuit with capacitance or resistance, they said, now you're talking our language, and they could see how the human body could be tuned and how we can intentionally create that tuning. And it was honoring them by meeting them halfway with their language. So those are things that I would invite you to consider as you go. And good luck. Shoot us an email. Let us know how it works out for you.
Very helpful. Thank you very
much.
Thanks
a lot. Take care.
Thank you.
Can we go on that side?
Yes. Who's next? Down there? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's like two hands there, a mother and daughter.
My question is primarily for Greg, I'm interested in your take on disclosure and how much, let's see, perhaps which group you were alluding to earlier in your talk, or which groups possibly that might have been our predecessors.
Well, that's two questions. So I began answering the first question yesterday after we saw the movie. Disclosure is already underway. The disclosure is a disclosure of our national relationship with life beyond this world. And it's coordinated, of course, through other nations. I mentioned China and Russia. But it's already underway, and they are now using the tools available to them, social media, mainstream media, and the kinds of films that we had the opportunity to see and hear to lay the foundation. The RAND Corporation, a big think tank back in the 1960s, worked with the Catholic Church. And together, they determined that the broad general human population was not ready to hear the information of disclosure, that it would disrupt the fabric of society. That was in the 60s. That thinking, that mindset has continued until the present time, and the last couple of administrations have considered that disclosure. I don't know how far they're going to go with it. I think what's happening now is the astronauts who had experiences, who signed non-disclosures, believing that they would be able in their lifetimes to talk about what has happened. They're dying, and they're taking this secret with them and to, you know, in their deathbed. Edgar Mitchell, who I mentioned, I toured with a little bit in the 90s, he did a little tiny radio program in London that he thought nobody was listening to, where he talked about personal experience and personal knowledge of beyond this world. All of a sudden, that clip circulated through the satellite in the mainstream media, and all of a sudden, it was all over the world. Ed Mitchell's talking about, you know, ETs, UFOs, and the other astronauts, they said, well, if Ed's going to talk about his experience, I'm going to talk about my experience. So there was a few weeks where it was all over the place. So I don't think it's going to happen the way I don't know that there's going to be one big announcement. I think it's going to be in stages gradually as people adapt and adjust. You know, and I think it's no surprise, certainly anybody in this audience, who be they? I think we're them. So I think what we're going to find out, the line between ET and human is going to become a very, very fuzzy line. And that's all I'll say about that right now.
Next. Thank you, Greg. Next question down there.
This question is for Greg. In 1981, there were articles in Los Angeles Times and in Nature magazine about cloned DNA from an Egyptian sarcophagus. Do you know anything about that work?
I don't want to hog all the questions. If you guys want to chime in or anything. In 1981, I know absolutely nothing about that. And in 81, I would doubt that it was true because the technology, I think, probably didn't exist in 81.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. We are able now to extract DNA, segments of DNA, from fossilized remains of plants, animals, and humans, and build the genome from that on paper. My sense is that we, as humans, we tend to push the limits of our technology. Somewhere out there, somebody is cloning. And where that technology is right now, I don't know. 81, to the best of my knowledge, we didn't have that technology in 81.
Thank you. Question. Another question?
So I originally asked you this, Greg, but I'm going to open it up to all three of you because I'm interested in all of your opinions.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was wondering, I'm in school right now to become a teacher, and I wanted to know from your guys' perspective, what's the most important thing to teach kids these days?
Well, go ahead, Deb. Deborah's got a background in educational literature.
Right. I've worked with children for 40 years, not in recently, but I wrote the book Meditating with Children in the 70s, became a bestseller, the first book on that. And I really, my answer to my question, to your question, is going to be related to why I wrote that book. When I was 21, I had a spiritual awakening, and I started to learn how to meditate. And I thought, why didn't somebody teach me how to go within when I was a young child? Because then I could have avoided some of the mistakes I made or the ignorances that I had from not going within up until at that time, when I was at the ripe old age of 21 when that experience happened. And I thought, oh no, I'm going to have to spend the next 20 years of my life undoing what I hadn't done appropriately. And I hadn't done anything that bad. You know, I had a delightful upbringing. So you look at that, but that still motivated me wanting to give children tools to get in touch with who they really are and stay in touch. So that would be my answer now, is the most important thing is to help children know how to go back to the heart, how to speak from the heart, how to connect with who they really are, and how to listen to their own inner guidance and have that be something the adults around them support and actually do as well. One of the things we teach in school systems, over 1,000 schools that HeartMath's in, from pre-K right through high school, is simple emotional self-regulation skills. How do you manage your anger, your frustration? How do you take it back to your center and make a different choice? And I think that's really important because children today, in general, are not coming to school emotionally prepared to learn. They're taking on their parents' stresses and social stresses. So any kind of emotional, social-emotional skill learning where they can become more in charge of themselves and have a straighter path to who they really are is what my heart's desire would be.
Yeah, thanks for asking the question again. And I know you asked me in our one day, and we didn't get to connect at the end of the program. My feeling is, I think it's important to be honest, truthful, and factual with our young people. Honest, truthful, and factual. And, you know, in terms of the curricula, it's a moving target because new discoveries are emerging all the time. You didn't mention, are you thinking about teaching in private or public schools? Private school. Okay, I can repeat that. That's fine.
I want to do public school, low-income areas.
Well, this is the thing. Public schools in this country, now it's different in other countries, and this is something you might want to think about. In this country, a public school, a teacher can only teach a curricula that has been approved by the local school board. And the local school boards are beholden and are governed. There are political ties, there are religious ties, there are economic ties that prevent them from the curricula that contains the kind of much of the material that you and I have been talking about over the last few days. Elon did an intro for me the other day, and he mentioned that I'm a nominee for the Templeton Award. That Templeton Award from the Templeton Foundation, should I be blessed to receive that award, that money is earmarked for me developing the curricula. I'm already developing a mainstream curricula, but it's on the back burner. That money should come through. We kick it into high gear because there's so much of a demand for teachers asking me for the curricula for them to share with their students that I'm sharing in a very different language. We use a different language for middle school. We use a different language for high school. So a lot of that is determined by the local school boards. And I'll say there are some very progressive school boards in the United States of America, particularly in the Pacific Northwest, in Oregon and in Seattle. And believe it or not, in South Florida, that have invited me to come in and offer. We've got pilot programs with second graders, and then we have another one for middle school, another one for high school. So I am developing that curriculum. I'd love to work with you. If you get to a point where you're ready to do something like that, contact us through Lori, and I'd love to work with you on the curricula for something like that. Yeah, thank you.
Next question, down here. Yeah, sorry, Lori.
I can go. Where are we going? Yeah. Where am I going?
Lori's used to exercising every day. She hasn't been able to do it here, so we're making up for that right now.
For Debbie or for you, first of all, I was very happy with this instrument, and I'll be doing your four-day program. I worked a lot in the corporate world, and there's so much heart needed. So I don't know really how to phrase this, but I think I'm curious in knowing from the point of view of the corporations, what do they want? In other words, in this proposition that you have, how do they see it? What is the benefit that they are interested in buying from you when they hear a presentation or whatever other aspect coming from their side?
Sure. Well, what you're speaking to is, you know, there's got to be a business reason if you're talking to the company about why they spend money in order to receive training and what's the outcome that they're after for that. Let me preface my answer by saying, yeah, I'll answer that question specifically, but keep in mind when you're dealing with a corporation, I like to think about them as people, you know, not just institutions, you know, and they're human beings. They have hearts. They have care. They have love. They have their own life experience, and they're not all bad people by any means at all. And so you relate to them, first of all, as a human being. And I think what you'll always find, if you're bringing in something like similar to what HeartMath does or some consultative angle that you're bringing into the organization, when you make that sale, it's going to be because the person that you were working with to make that sale got it and got you. There was still a heart connection that happened that made that relationship lead to a revenue exchange for a service. So that's the first thing to remember. It's just, you know, that's the person you're looking for, the decision maker that can get it and understand what you're trying to do. Now, the internal sale is the next step in that, which means they may get it, but they've got to sell it to everybody else. And so there has to be a business reason on the back end of it. There are a couple of business reasons that that organizations employ HeartMath. First of all, let me say that the majority of the organizational training programs that we are involved in this time at HeartMath is actually in healthcare institutions, not corporations. We made a shift and a pivot a number of years ago where a lot of our focus was now put on healthcare. And the area of healthcare where we do most of the organizational training is actually in hospitals. And we are training primarily the nursing staffs. So I'm taking it all the way down now to where are we in this scheme of things. We're training nurses. And why are we training nurses? Well, two reasons. One is the stress levels in the hospitals are through the roof and they lose their employees. There's a high level of turnover in hospitals and amongst the nursing staff because of burnout. So the business benefit is retention. Do the math. They do the math. They say, if we can retain 5% of the people that are leaving this year and only spend this much with HeartMath, we made this much more. So they do the math on the retention numbers. The other is actually patient care. Hospitals today are getting ranked more and more on the services they provide. It's becoming more transparent to the public about particular hospitals, what they do, what the patients think. They actually have scales and rankings for hospitals and areas. And patient care is really important. So the staff has to be resilient in order to maintain the caring attitudes and caring practices that are necessary to transmit that to the patient. And what's interesting about that, when you think about it from maybe an angle of view that we've been experiencing together this weekend, is that the energetic transfer is happening in that hospital. If you have a whole group of caring people that are able to maintain a certain pitch or frequency of that care that's operating within that hospital, those patients benefit from that. You know, love and care are the greatest healers of all. And so they benefit from that, and therefore, patient satisfaction numbers go up, hospital rankings go up, hospital's happy. So retention and resilience are the two primary offers that we make. Resilience is, you know, is also offered to corporations as well. But to have a resilient organization today, which means one that can handle the stress and strain of some of the things that I talked about in my presentation yesterday, of the speed of change, the acceleration of change, the dynamic world in which we live and what that's doing to people, how do they maintain that internal equilibrium and poise that they need as an organization to meet the business challenges? And we can help them with that. We focus on resilience and retention as two primary benefits.
Let me add to that, because we did move more into, and this is the United States, more into the hospital systems because of their receptivity and their willingness to do assessments pre and post metrics, which we're very strong in, and the corporations were stopping a lot of their soft skill training, so there was no funding. Now there is a huge wave of interest again, but as Howard said, where their funding is leadership and they're spending money on innovation and creativity because they think that's what's needed, which it is. But in terms of all their metrics on performance and leadership, they're failing. It's not working as much. So now they're recognizing that stress and health issues are really underpinning, which is related to resilience and what we talked about the other day, coherence, incoherence, because to have the optimal frontal lobe, executive decision, creative, innovative aspects of our brain going, we can't be in cortical shutdown through stress all day long. So being able to, you're going to become certified, you'll understand the research, and when you can express the research and you can offer pre and post assessments and all the HeartMath case studies to back that up in how you're talking to companies, it's hit, go for the leadership though. That's where the funding is in the United States. I don't know about other countries. And that's where they are starting to look for something different because they're spending a lot of money on stuff that isn't working because they're not addressing basically the consciousness aspect, and they don't call it that, but it really is the ability to recoup, reboot from the stressors that they're having and get some cortical facilitation going. So health and wellness, there's budgets there, there's budgets with leadership. But you'll learn how to put together the presentation when you take that program. Just the best practices of what we've learned. Other people may have better ideas.
One more thing I'd like to share before we go off of this. This is for everybody, really. Do you think police officers have stressful jobs? Sure. Absolutely, especially right now, right? So we have an emphasis on working with police. But one of the coolest things that's happened in the last few years in that area of our work is this. We have representatives in other countries that represent our brand. A number of them are in Europe. One of them is called HeartMath Benelux. They operate out of the Netherlands and they service, you know, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Luxembourg. They have a contract with the Dutch Police Department, police force. They are delivering a three-hour resilience model based on HeartMath, teaching a HeartMath technique, teaching them about coherence. And they are training. They've been in the process of this for several years already, but they are training 40,000 Dutch police officers.
Wow.
In a resilience-based model.
Wow. Greg, can you tell?
They use the M-Wave. They have the M-Wave that's back, the little handheld. There's in a little video, there's an M-Wave to the belt in the back, and while they're even doing their target practice, the captain is watching when he goes into the green and saying, now, so that they really are centered.
Wow.
To help eliminate,
to be able to be have situational awareness and self-regulation, so that what you're doing is coming from balance and poise, not from reactivity and fear, which is the big issue in police officers.
And about one more thing, about a year and a half ago, I went to there and I did a small training program for our Dutch licensees. They wanted it for their own trainers, the people that were doing the training. And so in there were these Dutch police officers who were actually trained by our licensee to deliver training in the police forces. These guys were in there. And the night before, I had done another program these guys had seen, and I talked about something I'm going to talk about in the workshop that I'm going to do with Greg, you know, later next week, about different dimensions of consciousness, breaking down different dimensional views and how dimensions operate in terms of belief systems that take place within each dimension. And I said, go through my presentation and take out the slides that you don't want. And so he did that. And when I got the presentation back, there was all that stuff on the dimensions. And I said, you really want me to talk about this in that group? He said, yeah, go ahead and talk about that. Well, I did, and then we left, and he was driving me to another event in Germany, and we were in the car, and within about an hour, we had two phone calls, and they both came from those Dutch police officer people, saying that was some of the most interesting things I ever heard about. That dimension stuff really helped me. Wow. So you never know, right? Because it gave them context on what was happening in their lives and in the world. It put it in a contextual format for them that gave them understanding, whether we called it dimensions or not.
I'm invited to do presentations with corporations, not formal trainings, the way that you all do. They're not listed on the website. Most of you don't even know about them, but they're very technical corporations, Korean electronics corporations. I've done some stuff with the military. And what they're, the Air Force specifically, and what they are interested in specifically, and they tell me this, stress reduction, worker productivity, increased worker productivity, and team building. Those are the three things. And where this is a little different, when Howard and Debbie, when they go into a program, they're talking about those kinds of things. They're not necessarily talking about it from a spiritual perspective. You can't do that in a corporate environment. But what you're really doing is getting people into their hearts. Mm-hmm. And once people get into their hearts, there's a whole... I'll just tell you, this is... A friend of mine was a meditation teacher in Colorado. She still is. And the United States Air Force Training Academy is based in Colorado Springs. And right after 9/11, they wanted to train special ops in the Air Force, like Navy SEALs in the Navy, and teach people how to be alone with themselves for long periods of time without going crazy. So they invited her to come in, and she taught them about getting in their heart. And it was, you know, her brand, her way of doing this. It was so successful that once those cadets got into their hearts, they found out there's a whole new world inside of them that they wanted to know more about, and their outside world of being in the military didn't make much sense to them anymore. So she lost her contract, but the point is she got these people into their hearts. So it's all about the, you know, the perspective. But those are the three things that I've seen is the team building. They really want people to be able to communicate with one another on a very conscious level, and there are modules in the HeartMath Resilience training for communication, stress reduction for everybody. Resilience is a part of all that, and worker productivity is the bottom line for them. So if you can help them with those metrics, you know, that's what happens.
Can you tell that little story you like to tell when you got on this flight and you were looking at the cockpit?
Yeah, I wasn't going to, but I will. And I don't know if you all know this story or not. So I fly on airplanes a lot. You guys probably know that. My home airport is Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I have a habit when I get on the plane, I always look to the left to look at the birthday of my plane. I like to know how old my plane is. There's a little plaque on the inside of the door as you're boarding. It'll tell you when that plane was manufactured and by who. And I always glance to the left if it's a small enough plane, you know, a Boeing, you know, or an Airbus or something. I like to see what the pilots are doing. I like to see who's flying me today. So, and I say hi to them, you know, and just say how things are going. And a lot of them know me because I fly so much. So one day I got on the plane and I looked, and usually they're going through a pre-flight checklist. And this day, they're facing forward in the cockpit. This day they weren't. They were facing one another over the console, and they had a portable M-Wave, and they were getting coherent before they were flying. And I said, this is the plane I want to be on with the coherent people flying, yeah.
That's awesome. So cool.
It wasn't like a big M wave on the computer. It was the little handheld that Jerry has in the back. And it was so two men. There were two men facing one another getting coherent before they were flying.
That's good.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I have a question. You presented a basic business model to the gentleman who was wanting to get started, as well as some basic information on how to get started, like in working in a school. To me, that's an old model that's been around for quite a while. So I'd like to ask, have you or can you envision a new business model of how to get started, how to get things going, if you want to call it that, as we evolve into a new human?
I'm not sure this answers your question, but there's the idealistic business models of what we would love to see, and there's what people are willing, where people are at, where companies are at, and you've got to use your own intuition of how to build that bridge. Like, I leave from here and I go to a conscious leaders forum in Silicon Valley where some of the leaders there are trying to explore new business models through conscious capitalism and other types of. The reality is, though, they're isolated leaders within a company, unless it's like Patagonia, that the CEO or the leader at the top is setting the culture and saying, this is what we're all going to do. And there are companies that are doing that, but then it really has to do with the decision-making power of the vice president, the CEO, whoever can set the culture within their downline channel of influence. So it becomes an art, it becomes an act of care to know, okay, there's a business model that could be win-win for everybody. Now, how do I interface with what the reality is of the hospital I'm working with, or the company that I'm working with, or the governmental agency? We're building bridges, and I like to think of ourselves as bridge builders because that's where sky meets street, where love really can be put into action and not, and you know, leave us where they're saying, when is the world going to be ready for it? It's ready for the bridge builders now. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer it any better, really. So, yeah, I can get another one.
Hi, I'm Heather. Recently, about a week before I came here, I was given a number 528 when I Googled it. It came up as an ancient Gregorian tone. And it is the frequency of love and miracles. And also the information that I should start to drink rose water. And when I looked up rose water, it has a frequency of 320, which is one of the highest frequency oils that you can drink, basically, or is available. Excuse me. My question is, what do you know about these tones, if anything? Have you used it in your research? And could you also comment on being conscious about the frequencies that we're inputting into our body and how that affects the vibration?
I think we need Dr. Todd here.
Yeah, I can't comment on it directly, but I will say in general is that when you're given information like that, it's... Oh, he's there. I didn't see him. Okay, there he is. When you're given information like that, it's coming to you, and so you are empowered to go back and ask wherever that information came from, what it means for you, and ask the questions that you're asking us, because it's specific. It was being given specifically to you. It's like asking us what your dream means. We could speculate, but it's your dream, so only you know what the symbols are. So those numbers specifically, Dr. Todd, if you would like to address what she's asking about those. Mm-hmm. Number specifically.
So, yeah, would you please repeat the question for me?
Excuse me.
So may I answer precisely?
I was given the number 528, and I Googled it, and I knew this is the right answer. It was it's called esophageal tones or frequencies.
Esophageal.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And specifically 528 was given to me as something I needed to use. Mm-hmm. And previously, right before that, I had done something that Amber had suggested of kind of like psychic surgery and removing things from my DNA strands. Mm-hmm. Also, rose was given to me, rose water that I was supposed to drink. When I Googled it, it was interesting that everything that came up was related to frequency. Mm-hmm. Frequency of foods, oils, all of that. But just curious what you know about these tones, how best to use them, if you've used them in your research and seen beneficial results.
Mm-hmm. So I think this really addresses heart math and almost everything we do, that everything in the universe is about resonance. It's about matching vibrational frequencies. The heart math concept is creating the resonance of love and compassion, and when you create that field, wonderful things happen. It's just the nature of that vibration and the harmonization and the amplification of the field. So everything has a frequency and resonance related to it, and that will be how it will tune a system. So every single frequency in the audible spectrum tunes to particular parts of our physiology. So as you know, I work with the pineal tones, and those resonances are about vibrating the pineal gland to wake up dormant aspects of our DNA, expand awareness, and facilitate direct healings just by the body being able to hook into its intrinsic capacity to heal. Another ability is if someone has a pain in their body, you can immediately find the frequency that matches to that. 528 gets into that interesting spectrum. There's all sorts of controversy about A440. If musicians have to decide whether they go to 444, 442, 432. There's lots of controversy over what is the truest A if you're tuning your instruments. And if I heard that specific frequency, I could tell you where in your body it would resonate. It's probably going to be somewhere, I suspect it's going to be a heart-related frequency. The solfeggio frequencies are interesting because it's a repetition of the same sequence of frequencies, but it sounds like they keep going higher and higher and higher, even though the frequency patterns are changing, just the sense of an ascending spiral that keeps going higher and higher and higher. So that's also a pattern to get you sort of unstuck in a physical place and go to another level. In the basic sense, everything in the universe is about frequency and vibration. If you ask what's more fundamental, is it waves or particles? What's waves? It's about vibration.
Thank you, Dr. Todd. Stick around here. There may be something more. Yes.
My mouth. Oh. Hi, I think this is a heart math question. One of the things I do is work with PTSD, and you already answered my question about police officers, first responders, soldiers I feel you're working with. One of the things I work with is bullies. We seem to have that happening in our country a lot right now. I was wondering if you've been working any with the heart math, with not the one being bullied, but the bully theirself, and any of your thoughts at all on that, how we can get that switched in our country or the world? Bully?
Bullying. You know, we have, actually. The director of education at HeartMath, Jeff Golitz, has done a lot of work in schools with teachers, superintendents that bring HeartMath into the whole district, program called Smart Brain, Wise Heart, we're about to launch, and programs that we've had called Early Heart Smarts. What it does is it gives tools, simple techniques that we teach into our adult programs, but simplified for children according to their age level, where they're able to learn, just practice, how to shift emotional state. Just like we saw in the M-Wave Pro up here, how to go from incoherence to coherence in a minute. The kids learn how to do that. There's games on the M-Wave Pro. They learn how to make those shifts. And so whether you are the bullier or the being bullied, the victim, a lot of it is still coming from how you're feeling inside. You know, the bullies are often really stressed out, upset, disturbed children. And if they can learn some of those basic skills to connect more with who they are, they have less bullying. And at the same time, the victimized child learns how to be more authentic. So he's seen results on all, both sides of those equations of children just learning how to get coherent, you know, and how to be able to
improve that. But then it can go deeper because so often the children who are the bullies have problems at home, and that opens the door for perhaps a teacher or school psychologist to be able to assess at another level how to help the child.
Yeah. Here's what I'd like you to do. Send an email to info@heartmath.org, the nonprofit part of us, to Jeff's attention. She alluded to him. His name is Jeff Golis. The way we're structured, we're in divisions at HeartMath. HeartMath's like a big little organization, so there's a bunch of people working there. So he has the firsthand answer to your question that I wouldn't necessarily have. But we train lots of teachers, administrators, counselors, all kinds of people are certified in HeartMath. So the stories do come back of different areas of which our work is being applied to improve the lives of others. I don't have a particular story about working with a bully and seeing improvement, but I guarantee you they're there. And if Jeff would know about that and may even know people that are doing that type of work specifically that you could be in communication with. So just, if you go through that door, that might be your best way to get that answer.
info@heartmath.org, and then just ask for Jeff, or I can give you my card and you can send it to me and I'll forward it to him. There's a lot of resources on the website too, but one of the things that he has told me stories verbally of like that, of when the heart starts to open, whatever reason you go in, whether it's the child's trying to improve their test score, it starts to open the door to everything that's out of phase with the heart, out of balance.
I just finished turning the manuscript for the new book I mentioned, Human by Design, coming out in October. And I have a section in the book that addresses exactly what you're talking about right now. And this is one of the pieces of research, and I spent a lot of time researching this, and I was surprised at what I found. What the studies are showing is when young people have a really solid, rock-solid knowing of who they are, then the bullying doesn't affect them the way it does for young people who are lost, do not have an identity, and are taught that they are powerless, helpless, and insignificant beings. So when by parents and schools, as we begin to change the curricula to show that we are more than an accident of nature, and we begin to show that nature is based in cooperation and nature actually likes us and what's called mutual aid is out there. And there are ways to share this with young people that make it a lot of fun. But they begin to think about themselves differently, and the stronger self-knowledge and the better that they can identify with themselves, the less that bullying is going to influence them. And the flip side of that is many of our young people are so lost right now that the bullying, they believe what's being told, and there are very high rates of suicide among young people who are bullied on Facebook and Twitter because they believe they have nothing else to base their belief on other than the reflection of what other people are giving them. They haven't received it at school or at home from their parents. So it all comes back down to that question, who am I? Who are we? And as we begin to redefine that in an early age with our young people, I think we're going to see less of the bullying on the one side, and those that are bullied are going to be stronger, and they will respond in a very different way than what we're seeing. This is a relatively new phenomenon because of the technology right now. Yeah. Thank you for your questions. Good question.
And ultimately, they'll discover more self-worth, which
that's
is the foundation. Yeah. Next question.
Hi, I'm Allison. I have a question for all three of you. There's something that each of you kind of touched on in your talk, which I'm new to and I'm learning about, so forgive me if I don't get it right. But I'm curious about how some of these external frequencies, fields, things like that are affecting us. Things like the Schumann resonance or the solar changes. I've heard recently we're heading into like a grand solar minimum. Some of the interesting, more cosmic energies that might be coming in and how those are affecting our own coherence and maybe how they're cycling or what you all have seen with the changes of these things and maybe what's to come or how we can adapt to those types of things. Sorry, that's more than one question.
First of all, thank you very much for your question. It's a great question. And yes, we all touch upon that understanding in our own different way, don't we? And, you know, certainly there are a lot of external influences that are taking place. They always have been, really. It's nothing new, it's just that they're increasing, and the vibratory rate of the influences is increasing. One of the things that I pointed out yesterday when I was describing some of that from my point of view was not to take the fun out of it, but it still goes back to what we do with it. It's the self-responsibility piece, you know, where we find our own heart and our own connection between us and us, and then the external influences can have different effects. So there's no one particular effect. And I mentioned a term I used in my talk yesterday when I was talking about geomagnetic field and the influences that I was sharing, is that it's not out to get us. You know, it's not trying to hurt us. There's nothing about it that's trying to hurt us. It's part of the acceleration. So it becomes a matter of whether it's cosmic, whether it's solar, whether it's human resonances, whatever influences that are there, it becomes a matter of our conscious choice on how we take that energy and what we do with it. The same energetic influence that could be creating that chaos can also be creating an acceleration in consciousness, an acceleration in our own evolution, allowing us to change and grow easier and better and more dynamically than ever before. And that's the fun part of the whole shift. But the challenges do come up. And, you know, I'll let Greg and Debbie give their answers as well. But certainly, I'll just use a generic term, not so much a medical or scientific one, but all these influences are jacking up the vibratory rate of the mind and emotions. And when that's not managed...
I love it when you talk that way.
Yeah. Scientific terminology.
That's right.
Jacking up the vibratory rate of the mind and emotions. And when that happens and it's not connected to a solid core, when there's nothing anchoring that, nothing guiding that, nothing wrapping its arms around it to give it context, it causes a lot of crazy stuff. People begin to behave very differently and erratically. And it can relate to so many of the things that you guys have, some of the things you've even brought up. I mean, what is bullying about? It's like some kid who's just, you know, whacked, that just wants to hurt other kids and do it online and troll them on Facebook and Twitter. And all this is just a lot of what I'll call aberrant behavior shows up when you have a lot of that increase in vibratory rate in our mind, but especially in our emotional bodies, that's just not being handled. And it just causes a lot of distortion when that occurs, and it finally has to get brought back to the heart before it's all said and done.
Which is what we're seeing, like in a lot of the terrorist stuff, a lot of the what's going on right now. The energies are whacking people out if they don't know how to process it. Nothing to be scared of, I really don't believe, because there's a lot of protection as well. But for ourselves individually, I'll give you a story. Like, a lot of people talk about, oh, the full moon is coming, and the energies can amp up the full moon. And so you can not sleep at night, you can just feel like you're quicker to have a temper tantrum. You know, it can affect you. But if you practice heart coherence, you know, if you look at the power spectrum on the M wave, if you go back there and Mariah can show you, or if you've seen it, the coherent spectrum is at 0.1 hertz. That's the frequency. And that's the resonant frequency of nature. So when you're in heart rhythm coherence and the alpha rhythms are become coherent, your brain waves are coherent, your body's in that state of harmony, you're actually phase matching the frequency of resonance with nature all the way from the quantum level to the macro level. So you're in that state that can protect you the most as you learn to increase and practice heart coherence. It's nature's state. It's not something we made up. It's just the ideal harmonious state of the system. That allows you to process these energies very differently. Yeah, for example, this is a story. You know, when a lot of old stuff's coming up for people right now too, from the cellular to clear out. And if you get hooked into it like the same old story, because they can be strong imprints, then you can start to process that and get right back into the, oh, that was unfair, why did that happen, even if you've been beyond it. Anyone relate to that? Okay, so you've been beyond it. Now, when the full moon happens or a solar flare or extra cosmic energy, that gets amplified. So what do? Even if you know better conceptually, it can be hard to shift. And part of you doesn't want to because you can get all back involved in it. I mean, that happened to me at a full moon, and I've done a tremendous amount of this type of inner work. I've learned to just say to myself, stop right at the start before it starts going, because otherwise Doc Childry's also Southern, our founder, and he'll say the cousins will come in. And you know what those are, you know, and one thing leads to the other, and pretty soon you're in this whole blame game fest that you know better than that, and you're draining your energy. So shifting back to center,
shifting back to compassion for yourself, which is why we emphasize that so much right now, because that's a coherent energy. Having compassion for others, bringing your heart rhythm back into coherence. That's why the technology, I mean, I use it every day on it more. There's advanced challenge levels so that I make sure I'm not fooling myself and that my system really is in that physiological coherence. And then my vibration, my pitch goes up. Then guess what happens? That extra energy amplifies my intuition. It adds energy to my heart's guidance, telling me which direction to go. And then I feel the support of universe behind it. It amplifies the love I put out. So, A, there's a lot of choice points. We call them hinge points going on right now for all of us. And coherence practice and feedback just gives us a little extra power up to be able to stay in that harmonious inner balanced state or get back to it and then make choices that are more guided by our higher intelligence. So the energy is neutral, but it is there and it goes in waves and it can be very strong.
I think the key word, who asked that question? Where are you? The key word in what you asked was, are we influenced? And I think that's really important to acknowledge that whatever is happening, it may be an influence, but we are not slaves to these phenomena. We're not slaves to the solar cycles. We're not slaves to what's happening, the magnetic fields of the Earth. And that's what both Howard and Debbie have said up here. Can I share the conversation I had with Roland? Can I share that with the audience? Are you okay? Originally, Roland McCready is the lead scientist at the Institute of Heart Math, and he, at one time, he was going to be part of our program here. It didn't work out that way. But I just had a conversation with him a couple of weeks ago, and he was sharing with me a study, and I know you all know about this study, that surprised him. It had a result that surprised him, and here was the study. They took a small number of people that were spread throughout the state of California. So they were all Californians, but you know, LA is very different than Sacramento. So these people had different lifestyles, different ways of thinking, different political views. And they wired them with a harness to measure heart rate variability over a 24-hour period. So rather than hooking an ear cuff for 3 minutes, you've got a harness that measures everything you do every minute of the day for the 24 hours. And what the researchers expected was that every one of these people, their lives, because they were so diverse in their lifestyles and their beliefs, that their heart rate variability would be so different that when they all came back, they would kind of average one another out and kind of look like a flat line. Well, the data came back, and that's not what happened at all. Even though they were geographically diverse, culturally diverse, different belief systems, different political views, what happened with all of these people was when their heart rate variability was up, it was up for everybody. When it was down for everybody. And so Roland said, there's got to be a unifying factor outside of their everyday lives that these people are responding to. But there's just a handful of people on the West Coast. We need more people to see what it's going to do. So they did this project again with 5 different countries. Mostly European, I think they were all European countries.
No, we had them in Lithuania, Saudi Arabia, and California.
Was it California was one of them?
And New Zealand,
no,
too. Yeah.
New Zealand, there were 5 countries. There were 5 of them that were there. Okay, so Saudi Arabia, Lithuania,
New Zealand.
Was it
California, which is not a country, but, you know.
It's almost a country. So here's what happened. Now they're dealing with a whole lot of people, very diverse geographically, very diverse culturally, religions, belief systems, everything. And the same thing happened even with a greater number of people. And they're saying, my God, what is the factor that unifies them all? And they took a look at this, and it is the magnetic field of the Earth. We are all attuned to the magnetic field of the Earth. When that magnetic field is stronger, it's affecting the strongest magnetic field of our bodies. When it's weaker, it's affecting the weakest. This goes back to what we did this morning. We are part of nature. We cannot separate ourselves from the natural world. That's why when we create heart-brain coherence, 0.1 hertz, optimum coherence between the heart and your heart and your brain, let's get personal, between your heart and your brain, what you are doing is you are harmonizing yourself to the rhythms of this earth under your feet, wherever those rhythms are going, so you're always going to be harmonized and tuned to those rhythms. rather than trying to fight them and struggle against them. And it's people that do not have that harmonization. They're the ones that sometimes are maybe a little confused or maybe a little off. I got to tell you, I'm a Cancerian male. Y'all know about Cancerians? They are nurturing. They a home. It's all about home. We never want to leave home. It's a whole story there. Well, so now everywhere I go is home. This is my home. So I'm cool with that. I'm a double Cancerian, and all of my planets are in the 12th house, and every one of them is in the sign of Cancer. So my world is all about nurturing, and it's all about home. And when I'm ruled by the moon. And when that full moon happens, I have learned, don't even think about trying to go to sleep tonight, because it's going to be a rush of energy. And for me, when I'm harmonized, and we all do this. We do heart-brain coherence multiple times a day. I know I do, and I'm sure you all do. Joe Dispenza does it multiple times a day. I mean, we couldn't be here with you if we didn't actually do this stuff. And so when that full moon comes, what I know is I can harness that energy. And I'm a musician. I'm an artist. I'm a writer. And that's the night I'm going to be up late creating. So it's not disruptive to me because I am attuned. I'm in harmony with that rhythm. So, and I think you all, it's just so important. Don't buy into some of the YouTube videos and just crap. Some of the crap that's out there that tells you, oh, this planet's aligning with that planet and it's going to have this influence on us. And, you know, be afraid. Be very afraid. We are influenced. We are not slaves. We are free will beings. And we have the free will to harmonize with our Earth, to ride the wave through this beautiful window of opportunity that we're having right now. So that's the way I'd like to say about that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So we're going to have to close for questions, but to close the session, if you have each of you one last words in 1-2 minutes each, you can.
Well, it's been a very inspiring weekend for me, being my first conference with Cryon, or what we've been doing here, and being able to be part of this. And I won't be seeing you all again because I'll be leaving. But I want to say that what I'm appreciating so much is the depth of inquisitiveness, of care, of the commitment of wanting to do something. We're all part of this together. And sharing collaboratively what our inner knowingness is and our capabilities and supporting each other, cooperating. That is the planetary shift. It's like weaving the frequencies on the grid between all of us so tightly that it really can lift the vibration of the planet among us here and other light workers throughout the world, putting out the love and the care and compassion through those conduits. So I've just been honored to be part of this. I hope that the tools and techniques of heart math, you learned some, as well as some of the science, really can help you day to day, moment to moment, because that's what they're for. It's what do we do in between our wonderful meditations, and how do we shift back to coherence, like Cryon said, in a minute, go from incoherent to coherent. That's been our mission, is to help all of us do that more. So thank you. I'm just very honored to be with you.
Thank you, Deborah.
You know, well, this will be the last time that we're together, this time, this way. You know, me up here, you guys there, all that stuff. But look, we've touched heart to heart. And I offered my love to you yesterday, and I meant it. And that's where it stands with me today for all of you. You're awesome, and what you're doing is awesome. And giving your time and attention to be here at this conference and listening to us and all of that, I'm humbled by all that. I really am. And I appreciate you for what you're doing, and you're doing for each other, and you're doing for the world. The last thing I'd like to say is this. We all go through these changing times together. Never lose your heart and never lose your hope. That somewhere in there, things are really okay. Things are working out, and they're headed in the right direction. So as dour as it may look sometimes, know that it's all headed in the right direction, and we're going to be all right. And that's just according to me. Sometimes other people quote authors or things I quote myself. But so according to me, according to me, things are really okay, and my heart's with you. Wherever we go, wherever we are, big love to you. Take care.
Thank you, Howard.
I want to reiterate what Howard said, but I'll do it sitting down. But you know, I've had the opportunity to be in these last few years. I've been on every continent of the earth except Antarctica. We haven't been there yet with a program. Not every nation, but every continent. And what I've found is that the people of this world are okay. We're okay as a global family. We know how to get along. We know how to go through the change. It's the governments that are having problems when you think about it. It's the governments that are bumping chests right now. It's not the people. So I want you to know we are okay. And I'm going to reiterate what Howard said. I met these two people from a professional perspective almost 20 years ago. And I now have the honor and the privilege of calling them my friends. And I want to thank Elon for pulling together the faculty this weekend that you did and allowing us to share our love with each other and with you in the way that we did. This was unscripted, and I think you all could see that. And for us to, the opportunity for us to weave a lifetime, many lifetimes of work together. What I'd like to leave you with, and I love you both. I do, and I just, I appreciate you so much for what you bring to the world. And I love every one of you, and I want to thank you for making the time to be here with us. And whoever you go home to, thank them for sharing you with us over these last few days. And I'm just going to reiterate what I said in my program earlier. Khalil Gibran, work is love made visible. It takes work to change the way that we think. And that work is our love made visible. I think our planet is worth it. I think our world is worth it. And I know that you and I are worth it. So with that, I'm going to close. The last time we'll be together this way. I love you all. Thank you all so much.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Deborah. Thank you, Howard. Thank you so much for sharing your heart as well as your mind and energy with us.